Welcome back to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. On today's show, we have the honor of speaking to David Radulescu, the first attorney in our over 300 episodes. Yeah, that's correct. Normally, if you're talking to an attorney, you have a problem. Well, not today. As you'll hear, he's a longtime friend of the lighting industry. First, some background. He's been litigating patents for over 30 years. Prior to getting his law degree from Columbia University, he got a PhD in electrical engineering from Cornell, where he focused on the semiconductors that eventually became the backbone of the LED lighting industry. After law school, he worked for some of the largest international law firms in the world, and 10 years ago, he opened his own firm, Radulescu LLP, a patent litigation firm with offices in New York City and Texas. The following statistic is probably the most impressive and explains why we are so thrilled to have him here today. Over his 30-plus year career, he has litigated more than 75 LED patent cases involving over 150 LED patents. That's a lot. That is more than any other attorney in the U.S. by probably an order of magnitude. His client list and experience with LED lighting, the LED lighting industry, goes back 30 years, so he has a lot of perspective on our industry, which we will try to get into today as much as we can. And even though I asked him in the preview to this how to pronounce his name, I probably screwed it up anyway, Greg Eric. Shoot. But
Close enough.
yeah, thank you. I'll tell you this, before you guys or after the show or whatever, kindly check out KeystoneTech.com, Greg Eric. That's KeystoneTech.com.
That's right, man. One fixture does it all, and I mean that with their area lights. They have their optic swap, new technology. The only ones I've seen that are doing that right now, type 3, type 4, type 5 distributions come in the box. You can't always assume all area lights should be the same distribution type. They have distribution types for a reason, and Keystone proves it right there by giving you all those. Also, power select, color select, different colors, Kelvin temps, and they give you the mounting kits that go with it. Everything you need for an area light, Keystone's got.
Get down there, KeystoneTech.com. You know, I say it always, all the time, the big easy, light made easy. And of course, their members, we're members, Greg and I, of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Your voice, that's right, lighting distributors. Your voice to the world to bring our knowledge, the distributors' knowledge, the people, the boots on the ground, the people that go look at the light fixtures, the people that find that driver, the people that are trying to find that bulb for people. We need a voice, and nailed is your voice, Greg Eric. It's your voice.
What it's there for. Join
Check
it.
us out. NALD.org convention in September. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you. Such a pleasure to be here. And as a
That
lawyer,
was it.
always happy to have an audience.
And that is an interesting thing. We haven't had a lawyer on. There's plenty of reason we should. You know, when you look at the lighting industry and especially the LED, that well, maybe even before LED, but you know, the LED lighting and what's all gone on there. A lot of patent wars going on. You're involved in them. Are you on the front lines? What's your job? Are you the general? What do you do over there?
I hope to be involved in every patent litigation involving LED technology, whether it's the plaintiff side or the defense side.
And you've been involved in, you said, over 150 cases or 75 cases with
So
150 patents?
it's 75 cases, and it's probably more like 200 patents, but it all started, of course, back when the commercial LEDs first came out in consumer products. This is when the, turns out it's the blue LED was created by a Nobel Prize winner, and he worked for a company called Nichia back in the 90s, and that inventor, Tsuji Nakamura, defected to the US, became a professor at the University of California at Santa Barbara, joined a Cree startup. And when those first commercial products came out that Cree was selling, there was the first patent suit filed by Nichia against Cree that ended up in a war across the world between Cree and Nichia in probably half a dozen cases that I was involved with, you know, maybe four or five in the US, two in Japan, one in Germany. And that dispute lasted for 3 years. And I was fortunate enough to end up getting a phone call to get involved with it because I think I was the only lawyer that knew something about it was gallium nitride at the time. And it's because I gave a talk at Cornell, and in that audience was Tsuji Nakamura and John Edman, a founder of Cree. And when they got sued, I got a phone call, got involved, and I've been fortunate enough to be involved in, most of these important large cases over the past, 20 years that started in chips. And then about 10 years ago, as the commercial light bulbs and fixtures came out, there were and are still, ongoing patent litigations involving the fixtures and the light bulbs. The chip wars, as we call them, lasted for about 10 years. And as I said, because of my success for Cree, when Nichia went after the largest Korean LED
They
chip
hired
maker,
you.
Seoul Semi, I got hired. And
So
then
Cree won.
after
So Cree won the chip wars.
Cree was the largest at the time, the largest US successful blue LED and eventually white LED maker. And they and Nichia settled their dispute after years of litigation, which I will take some credit for in terms of that settlement.
In the
And then
courtroom.
Nichia
They were in
in
the
the
courtroom.
courtroom,
So you guys had a
in the courtroom.
judge and you were arguing about gallium nitrate to a judge in front, like another lawyer is like, well, that's our gallium nitrate. No, it's a, like, how does this all go out? Like, I mean, what are they arguing about?
They're arguing about technology. They're arguing about who was first at developing these LED chip technologies. And because Tsuji Nakamura left Nichia and went to a Cree startup in California, there ended up being a trade secret dispute, an allegation that the trade secrets from Nichia made their way to the US, and we were successful in getting those claims completely dismissed on summary judgment.
Did Tsuji actually invent the LED chip in Japan? I don't even know this, or was it in the US?
So the thing that spawned this whole industry turned out to be the ability to put a chemical in gallium nitride and have it stay in there and not get sort of lost. And he was the one that figured out that the problem in the 1990s was that hydrogen was getting into these chips and neutralizing these impurities. And as a result, the gallium nitride semiconductor was essentially dead. He figured out, I got to do processing to keep the hydrogen out. And because of the high temperatures that are involved, he used nitrogen instead. And he was the one that found out how to keep that so-called dopant in there without killing it. And as a result, massive blue light came out of this material. And as soon as they saw massive amounts of blue light coming out, that was the missing color, right? There was red, there was green, they were missing blue for 50 years. And he was the one that effectively got the Nobel Prize that he shared with some Japanese professors because there was a simultaneous, contributions there. But that was the key. It was the key was to learn how to manufacture the gallium nitride in a way that kept the impurities that you needed there and got rid of the hydrogen.
You know, that's such a wonderful Nobel Prize. Like, what a technology that has changed the world. You know, when you think about it, you know, people don't think about lighting like they think of cell phones or TVs or something like that. But man, Tsuji Nakamura changed the world. So you, after crushing them in court, they hired you. Is that correct?
Well, I worked for Cree for years. We got a settlement with Nichia. Nichia then, because they had tons of patents, went to the largest Korean chip maker and sued them. That would be Seoul Semiconductor. And I got a phone call. And I've been working for Seoul Semiconductor for the last 15 years now. I actively have a ton of cases right now that we're doing for Seoul Semi. We got their settlement with Nichia. And after that settlement, Nichia then went to the largest Taiwanese chip maker or packager, and that was Everlight. And I ended up getting a phone call to help Everlight and file their suit in the US against Nichia. And the rest is sort of history in the sense of that was really the end of the chip wars. Those three major wars. That was probably 2012 or so. And ever since then, the chip patent litigations is primarily non-practicing entities that have acquired patents from some of these chip makers and others, and now are effectively just going after anyone making and selling light bulbs or fixtures. There's the what we call non-practicing entity patent litigation, where those companies are companies that all they do is own patents, right? They don't make any products, and they're just going after companies that are selling, fixtures. And so that's a transition that has that occurred back about 10 years ago, and it's been hot and heavy ever since.
So you're not a friend of Nichia's. That's safe to
Oh,
say.
no, not a friend of
Not at all.
Nichia's. So
Right.
let me ask something. Did are you collegial with the lawyers on the other side that are representing Nichia? Like, are you guys buddies? Do you have drinks and bars afterwards and all that?
Always collegial with my adversary, right?
There you
There's no reason not to.
Yep.
Do I have to take you behind the building and beat you up again, man? Because we've already done this. We've done it in Taiwan. We did it in Japan. We did it in Korea. You want to do it again here? That's hilarious. Okay. So,
I do want to ask one more
okay, go
thing
ahead,
about
Greg.
that, just because I'm curious. So, the going back to the beginning, the whole reason for the case was Tsuji went to Cree and wanted to start that. Nichia said, "No, we own the patent that he developed with us, and we are going to keep it. We don't want anybody else to have it." Is that basically it?
Basically the story. And he came to the US, he was recruited by the University of California at Santa Barbara. They have the top gallium nitride LED group in the world. And so the professors there recruited him, and he joined the faculty at UCSB. The UCSB is fairly known for the number of Nobel Prizes on their faculty. And as a faculty member, which is common at a lot of universities, you could do one day a week outside work. And so he ended up being a co-principal founder of a company that was acquired by Cree, right?
Got it. Okay. Interesting.
So, when I think about this from a business perspective, and I don't know if you can comment on this, but how much revenue, these guys might cut a deal. Like, let's say one of your clients would lose, say, to a company out there. I don't know which one, doesn't matter. And then they agree to pay a licensing fee. How much revenue from some of these companies are licensing patents? Like, how much, like, is it 15% of a company's revenue sometimes? Is it 40% of a company, or is it just a little bit?
So maybe you got to split the world up into the LED patents, just directed to the LED chip,
Okay.
right? And as you know, there's a handful of companies that are making them, right? And consumers aren't buying plain old LED chips for 2 cents or a nickel. Right, where all the money is these days, and it started 10 years ago, and Cree again, they introduced that first LED downlight, I think in 05 or so. And then if you remember the Super Bowl ad with the A19 that they came out with, but those are products that consumers are buying, that you go to Home Depot, you go to Lowe's, you buy all these LED products. And with respect to those patents, and again, that's a whole nother universe of patent activity, filing patents on the commercial light bulb, the commercial downlights, the commercial high bays. And in the early days, heat was a big problem. If you remember the very first product that you can buy, problems with the heat. They generated a massive amount of heat. You needed to figure out how to remove it. You put heat sinks in, and as a result, there are a bunch of early patents on design LED fixture and bulb designs with a lot of metal parts to extract the heat. And those patents are all out there and being asserted still. But as time went on, of course, these products became so efficient that heat ended up getting solved because they made more efficient LEDs. And now, when you buy LED light bulbs, very little heat's coming out of these things. So they're made of plastic. They're made of plastic. And so the old patents that had heat sink designs are old and likely inapplicable. The new generation of light bulbs and fixtures have very little heat sinking, issues. They're more directed to how cheaply you can make these things, right? How cheap and how easy can you make these things without a lot of parts? If you actually look at the filament light bulbs, the A19 filament light bulbs, the ones that have the yellow strips, those things look pretty damn close to Edison bulbs, right? The A19 Edison bulbs, and it's only been in the last couple years because the effort went into designing a light bulb that was more easily assemblable, makeable, manufacturable, cheaper, and still creating a lot of light and doing it with very minimal watts, right? The amount of wattage drawn on these products are 3 watts, 6 watts, 9 watts, 12 watts. And all of this technology is being sold in stores, right? Every couple of years is a new, later and greater design. And as these products are being sold more and more of, there's more and more patents being issued and more litigation over these type of products. All right, so
So,
that's the second type. And then with respect to your question of
yeah.
the royalty percentages,
Yes.
I think it's pretty common in the, I'll say the light bulb and fixture business to talk about patent licenses, real patent licenses that are 3, 4, or 5% of the
Really?
sale price.
So
Yeah,
it's related to the
that's
revenue. So you sell it for $100, you're getting 3 to 5% if you invented it from them.
if it's a fixture and the patent's directed to a fixture, it's a $100 royalty base. And you could convince someone to pay you 3, 4, 5%. Obviously, if you're a patent holder and you go to court and it's a competitor, you want to argue 10%, why not argue 15%? This is where the lawyers come into play with respect to trying to protect that massive investment
Is there a
on the
business
patentee
model?
side.
Is there a business model for some companies to crank out patents like crazy so that and then look for people to sue? Is that a business model? Do people do that?
So in the LED, I guess.
In the LED
Maybe
world,
I'll
yeah.
step back. Let me step back.
Sure.
Two-thirds of all patent litigations that are filed in the US, right? There's about 7,000 per year. Two-thirds of them are filed by companies that only own patents.
That's it.
And
That's all they
most of the
do.
time they're just buying it. That's all they're doing is buying a patent. They don't have
So would
any
that be called a
operating.
patent troll?
That would be a derogatory term for a so-called non-patent, non-practicing entity. And two-thirds of all patent litigations are filed by those type of entities. If you now bring that into the LED lighting industry, it turns out, as I said, there's 7,000, sorry, there's 3,500 patent litigations filed in the US. About 2% of them are in the LED lighting industry. There's about 70 per year. There were 69 last year. LED patent litigations filed across the country. And about two-thirds of those are by companies that are non-practicing entities or otherwise known as patent trolls.
Can you name names? I mean, that's probably something you could look up and find, but I'm just curious, who are these companies in the lighting space?
You've out of the two-thirds of these companies that are non-practicing entities, you have never heard of a single one because, for the most part, because they are created simply to own a handful of patents, and in some cases just formed by lawyers to help an acquisition, and they have a mailbox somewhere, maybe in Texas.
it's shadowy game.
You've never heard of their names.
And, shadowy, shadowy game.
And who's getting the money out of the deal? These people behind the scenes that nobody can ever find out who they are, huh?
So
except you.
You can find out who they are. The people that acquired the patents. People that acquired the patents have made an investment to buy patents that someone wants to sell. And a lot of times they have investors. They have investors in these small entities, and they're gonna split up the money that they make at the end of the day.
Well, I have a U.S. patent. So if you Google U.S. patent Michael Colligan, you'll see that I have a patent on a lamp recycling container that I invented and got patented in 2011. And what a brutal process. But if any of you trolls out there want to cut a deal with me, let's go. You can take my patent, go sue people. All I want is 50% of whatever you get. I'm good to go.
If we looked at, David, if we looked at common products, I don't know if you would you know who owns a patent? Like an example I'm thinking is like one of the most common things now is an LED type B bypass tube. Is there somebody that owns a patent to the disconnected ballast LED tube?
So with those products, there are it's hundreds of patents. It's not just one patent. Mm. It's not one patent. It's hundreds of patents by a couple dozen companies. If you think about all these companies doing research and development to make those bypass tubes, and if you remember, you know, 8 years ago, there's a big chunk of aluminum that ran down the inside of the tube. That was the heat sinking problem. But in the last 5 years, the aluminum's gone. The metal's gone. The LEDs are mounted on a printed, initially it started out as a printed circuit board, right? That was maybe metal backed. And even that's too big and bulky and expensive. It's down to plastic, right? Mm-hmm. Mounting the LEDs on plastic with metal wires. And every year there's new technology, new designs, right? The bypass tubes being sold today aren't anything close to what was sold 5 years ago. And that's because of the investment of all these real companies investing into advancing the technology. And if they're smart, they're filing patents. And so as a result, in that particular industry, there's dozens and dozens of companies filing for a couple hundred patents, right?
And it's like portions within the tube. Like they might have the ability to end it or wire it with both ends. That's a patent. Is that an example,
And think about also a patent on being able to stack those tubes in a box, you know, two by six, without the things cracking, without the things breaking.
That's what I invented.
Remember that
I invented a box.
They started with glass. They started with glass, and now they're plastics, and now they don't break. But the patents are directed to, you know, not only you know the wiring geometry, but you know,
I think
the
word
driver
is
circuit. The driver
David,
circuits are not the size of a thumb.
I think it's called prior art. Is that the right term for previous work? So you wouldn't believe how many patents there are on cardboard, Greg, on the cardboard configuration.
Just a cardboard alone.
Oh, man. You wouldn't believe. There's all sorts of different trays and egg cartons and all the sort of stuff that you have to – that are patented, dude. Yeah.
So within every LED tube that I sell, there's – hundreds of companies getting a portion of this profit potentially?
No, the very few, if any, are getting any patent royalties with respect to those tubes, just because you have to go and file a lawsuit or you have to go and convince someone to pay a royalty. And the problem is there's too many patents. And how do you ask, and how does a company pay 5% or 10% for a license on one patent when there's another dozen that are out there? Really, really hard to do.
Who's got the best patent? What's the best lighting patent you can think of? Like, this person's making the most off this thing. They got it locked down.
Every patent that my client that I'm representing and suing for
the best.
Has the best. And I can tell you which is the worst. I can also tell you which is the worst patent. Any patent that's owned by my adversary that's asserting infringement.
See, don't you dare complain to me that people hate lawyers, you son of a gun. Please, you cannot after that. No. So let's start. You said in your notes here, you know, you said Texas is a hotbed. I wouldn't expect Texas to be a hotbed. I think, you know, Delaware or, you know, New York or something. No, tell us what the heck's going on in Texas,
so,
David.
Texas, it was, there's a lot of history, but going back 15 years, what happened was the judges and the court down in Texas decided they're going to make it very efficient and I'll say economical for companies to file a patent suit in Texas because they're going to have uniform rules. They're going to have predictable rules on the logistics of the lawsuit and the process to go to trial. They are going to have a predictable schedule to go to trial. Like, in other words, you file here, we'll get you a trial within a year and a half. And the judges, they love those cases. They understood, they studied, they understood what patent litigation was all about, and therefore they made it attractive for patent holders to go to Texas, file suits, and ended up attracting a lot of patent business to the point where the Congress stepped in at some point back about 10 years ago and did a couple things to make it harder. But one thing that they did through the legislature is require that you can't join 5 to 10 companies together in a single suit. You got to file separate suits, you know, against them. And as a result, it made it tougher to enforce a single patent against an industry because now you had to deal with separate suits. That's Congress stepping in. And the other thing that happened was, and this was back in, I believe, 2017, the courts reinterpreted the rules such that if you're an operating business, you know, unless you have a physical operating business in Texas, you either have to get sued in the state where you're incorporated, and a lot of times it's Delaware, or you can only get sued where you have a physical operating presence. So as a result, the amount of Texas litigation ended up decreasing for a few years until recently a new judge in the Western District of Texas who loves patents, who has a history litigating patents, he was appointed and he effectively adopted uniform rules to enforce your patents in the Western District of Texas. He adopted schedules that were predictable and he gave each case and is giving each case its time and paying attention to a lot of the subtleties and a lot of the details. And as a result, made it attractive to file suit in the Western District of Texas.
You know, it's
so
interesting.
Now an upswing.
You know, that's a lot of jurisdictions are in the business of those kind of things. It's actually it's economically, it's crazy as it is to say, like London, England does a lot of that. They do a lot of work. Like one of the biggest exports of England is legal work or a jurisdiction that has a functioning legal system. I mean, that where people can bring cases and litigate there. And so, you know, I think it's smart for that federal judge to do that. That could become an industry. You know, I know that London, England does a lot of international law disputes and it's an export, believe it or not. They're exporting their legal system to the world. So good on that Texas judge and for innovating. That's what basically he's doing, would you say, David? He's innovating in the judicial space.
I think he's being careful and he's being thoughtful and he's being fair with respect to making it predictable for businesses and patent holders. And a lot of times it is the smaller patent holder that has to find their day in court And it's expensive. It's really expensive.
What's it worth
And
to some? What has
I
it got to be worth to somebody? What's a patent got to be worth on average? Like, do you need? I'm willing to spend $5 million on legal fees to get to go after. Like, where is?
So
Do you work pro
this is
bono?
where
Do you work? Do you get a piece of the action? How do you do it?
we have considered, and most of those arrangements are, I'll say, confidential,
Sure.
but a lot of firms, a lot of lawyers in the patent space will work on contingency,
Contingency, okay.
right? Where it's called contingency, where you don't get paid unless you somehow prevail and get some type of settlement. But with
Full-blown
respect to
dogfight, Greg. That's a full-blown dogfight then. Because
yeah.
these things can go on
So
for years. It could go on for years. You could invest years into a patent dispute and lose and not get any compensation.
you could do that if you're not experienced and you don't have control over what you're getting into. But the
Sure.
way to think about it is, with respect to people that have a lot of experience, like we do, 30 years of it, and with my team, it's probably 50 to 60 years of litigation experience. If we're not getting paid unless we prevail, believe me, we're not taking cases unless we think we can make money on it, right? And that's beneficial to the patent holders. But with respect to the settlement costs, as you referenced, a lot of products, and it's you've heard of the billion-dollar verdicts, right? Billion-dollar verdicts, patent verdicts, and those are in products that sell billions of dollars worth of products, like the
Sure.
iPhone,
Yeah,
right? The
sure.
Samsung iPhone Wars, or some of the Intel chips,
Sure.
where they're selling billions of chips. These are microprocessors, and when you sell billions of dollars worth of products, you could talk about large recoveries. But in the LED lighting business, there's few companies, right, that are, and with respect to individual products, as you know, you're not selling hundreds of millions of dollars worth of one particular type of light bulb. If you're lucky, tens of millions of for bulbs or for fixtures. And so for those type of cases that are bigger and more important, you can see how you want to invest in a good legal team to bring the case. Go ahead.
One other item, I'm not sure that we're able to say the company or not, but a licensing program that you're involved in. Maybe we can say. I don't know the rules. You're our first lawyer, so you tell me, what is this licensing program
So
you're involved in?
the largest one, and it's well known across the LED lighting industry. They have 1,400 licensees. This is worldwide. And the licensing program was started by Philips, which is now Signify. And that is a massive program that has a number of lawyers working for Signify. And they've been at it since well before 2010. I think in 2010, they hit 100 licensees, and they do about 100 new licensees a year. They're up to 1,400. And there's litigations that they file.
So the
Pretty common.
licensing is somewhat coercive in this case at times.
An adversary to Signify would say coercive, right? And then
This guy's great.
Signify would say they got a portfolio of hundreds and hundreds of patents, and what's the problem with charging you 3, 4, 5% of your sales to license my massive portfolio, right? And so I'm involved, and I have been involved with litigating against Signify. As of, I think, 2015, I got involved in my first case adverse to Signify. I've been in multiple courts for multiple clients, adverse to Signify in litigation. And of course, there's many more companies negotiating licenses, right? Negotiating. When you get a letter or a phone call from Signify to open up discussions because you're selling LED light bulbs or LED fixtures, you will at some point be approached, and they will ask to open up licensing discussions to take a license under the Signify-enabled program. And I'm involved with, yeah.
We're politely asking you to pay us 3 to 5%, or we're going to throw this book at you.
So,
That's
like,
your
what can you?
characterization.
Yeah, can you give a specific example of a product, or is that not allowed? You know, just like,
Now,
so we can understand what they're going after and what it's all about.
the Signify licensing program involves hundreds of patents, hundreds, and it may be over 1,000 in all different areas of technology, from, dimming technology is one example, right? Filament light bulbs is another area. Power factor correction in LED lighting is another area. Heat sinking technology is another area. You know, they acquired Cooper Lighting a couple years ago. Cooper Lighting had a number of patents in the CCT adjustable, right? All your products these days, I assume, have three or five CCT adjustments, a
So
switch.
is that why Philips
And
bought Cooper? Is that why they bought them?
some people may say that because of their patent portfolio, that was a motivating factor. But Cooper, and they've kept it as a separate business, right? Cooper Lighting Solutions. So I think there's enough separate independent business with them that the patents were maybe a benefit. But in any event, if you think about patents that are directed to all of these areas, and you're selling LED lights, right? You're conflicting with what they would say their patented technology. So you need to have a license. And it's for virtually all of your LED based products.
So, do you have a top five list of lighting manufacturers in terms of who has the most patents? And not, I'm not talking the trolls. We don't know the names of Signify. I know that name. You know, is there, are they the number one of names that we know? Or does Acuity have
Well,
more? Or do you know what list it is?
so I guess the way to do it is to ask, like, who is active in the LED patent litigation space, right? In terms of if you're making or selling, we'll stick with light bulbs and fixtures as opposed to chips, right? Because I talked about the chip wars that are long gone. With respect to the top players, like Acuity's not involved in filing litigations over their patents, but Signify is, right? And
You got
if
to get in the
I
game,
just
Acuity. Get in the game. Call. Pronounce your last name. Radulescu. Did I get it right?
Radulescu, so it's
Radulescu,
also known as
LLP.
radip.com,
Call them up. Get in the game.
radip.com.
Get in the easy money. Easy money. 3%, 3 to 5% is all you got to pay. And then you can make your little light fixture, sucker. Yeah. Easy
And
money.
I,
With This is so hilarious. I'm not laughing. I'm not. What I'm saying is that, you know, unless you understand that business and the intellectual property business, it seems to out like people that sell light bulbs like us, like a little bit of rent seeking. You understand what I mean? Like there might be
right.
some resentment out there towards this type of business behavior, but it is what it is. It's the law. It's the way it works.
And if I, I monitor every single, in my webinar that I give every year, and it turns out I counted them up, it was seven of them. For the past 7 years, every year I present for an hour and a half or so on the landscape in LED lighting with respect to patents, right? And so I've been following these patent cases, and I'm involved in as many as that I can get involved with. But if you look at the main LED lighting players and ask who are the top five, right? In the bulb or fixture arena, Signify is definitely at the top, and I can't even think of a second or a third that's been a repeat offender, right?
Son
You
of a
know,
gun.
every once in a while you get another company, to file one case or get sued, but it's a one-off. It's not year after year after year. It's primarily Signify, and it's because of their successful licensing program. When you have 1,400 licensees, the rest of these lighting companies, right? The rest of these lighting companies are busy pushing the envelope on technology. They're busy trying to figure out how can I get my products manufactured cheap enough and how can I get them into the US, given that most of them are made in Asia. But they're busy doing regular manufacturing and sales, not dealing with looking at their patent portfolio and filing suits on it.
Can I create a little description? Right? So you all remember about the Nord Stream pipeline that got blown up, right? So this is the Dutch Revenge pipeline, which sends a pipe all the way to the United States where money flows back from every light bulb in the world that's made in the United States or whatever, and it flows right into the country of the Netherlands. Is that a correct description? Royal Dutch Philips?
That would be one of Signify's adversary's characterization of what's going on.
It's a pipeline of money. It hooks up to the lighting industry screw in the United States and it sucks the money right under the Atlantic Ocean and right into the hands of the Europeans, the Dutch. And I'm sure we play the same games, David, on the other way around. What took down one of the things that took out BlackBerry, if anyone remembers that company, I still got one right here, actually. But if anyone remembers that, that's what killed them. They got into patent wars, $500 millions of dollars, and they were constantly fighting for the stupid thumbs and all this sort of stuff. And it was tough. I think it's funny. I think it's interesting. What's the takeaway here, David? For the average get a grip on lighting listener, which is a lighting practitioner, right? Someone who's it's not the general public. It's someone that sells lighting. What's the takeaway from your side? What should they take away from this? That the lighting industry is complicated and has a lot of dark, shadowy games going on at the top? Or how would you characterize it?
I the way that I would characterize it is as follows. If you have a lighting business, right, whether buying and selling or making, and it's LED related, and you're confronted with a patent issue. You're confronted with getting a letter sent to you from a non-practicing entity or another small company about patent infringement, or you get sued, right? The takeaway should be you really should think about getting a patent litigator involved. You should go and track down not only someone that litigates patents, but actually knows the technology and knows the business. And that's the most common source of our more important complicated cases come from getting hired a year after the client got sued, because they end up engaging a firm. Lawyers are really good talkers, right? They're
You
really good
sure?
talkers, and they can get hired in a heartbeat, any lawyer. And if you're not experienced with patent litigations in this field and you end up hiring a lawyer that is a good talker, right? Is a generalist. And we have had so many cases where it's a year into it, right? And the case is not resolved or the case is not going in the direction that you want. And we end up getting called to come in and fix. We come in as fixers to fix problems because we're into long-term relationships just as any proper business is, right? we're 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 thrilled to be able to get rid of a case in months,
I think
in months.
a good analogy for people, I couldn't agree more. I've had the unfortunate opportunity to deal with many lawyers and many lawsuits in the last 20 years. Not never been sued as a business, but just for whatever reason, I get myself into lots of disputes. I don't know why, Greg. It just seems to happen to me a lot. So I'll tell you, getting the right lawyer, it doesn't even matter what they charge per hour. Forget about what they're charging per hour. Like, I don't mean to tell you whatever, David. I mean, obviously, you want to think about that. But the most important thing is not what the lawyer charges per hour. It's whether they actually have experience in the type of law and the field that you're being sued in or whatever's happening. If that lawyer is learning on the job, God, it's such a way. I've seen it so many times. I'm like, you don't even know what you're talking about. You know, you can see that especially on complicated technology. And I'm not trying to give you an ad here, David, but it's just you're 100% right about that. You know, I'll send you the invoice after the show. but I couldn't agree more. When it comes to legal disputes, the first thing you need is the most experienced lawyer in that particular type of law. Get them to give you, or if you can't hire them, you're too expensive, get them to give you a referral. Tell them to give me, you know, send me someone to someone cheaper that but actually not crazy. You know, so.
And it's the hourly rate times the amount of time it takes. Right. If you're billing by the hour, it's the product of the two. And the most important factor there is how much time are you going to end up spending understanding the issues and coming up with a strategy and a plan. And as I tell a lot of people, I'm sort of embarrassed about it. But, you know, if you ask me, how is an LED chip made? Believe it or not, I know exactly all the micro layers that are being put together. It's embarrassing, you know, that I've been doing this for so long. And similarly, with respect to luminaires and bulbs, it's like really embarrassing that I could take a driver apart, right, and figure out what type.
I got one on my desk right now. I've been pulling one apart out here. David, let me. You do a seminar on patent litigation, right? Yearly, okay?
Yes.
Is it free?
It's free, absolutely free. And it moved to a webinar. I used to do it during Light Fair week. And I did it because Randy Reed at Edison Report invited me. You know how he does his yearly industry awards?
Sure, yeah.
And he does it off-site. He has to do it off-site because it's not sanctioned by Light Fair. He invited me to split the room with him one year. I think that was 7 years ago in San Diego. And I've been doing the same thing. It usually has been off-site at Light Fair. And believe it or not, we get 75 to 100 people.
I don't blame you.
And,
yeah,
and
sure.
It moved in 2020 to online. And again, 75 to 100 people on a Zoom webinar with, you know, 100 slides that I'm going through in an hour and a half. And I've gotten business out of it. I've gotten people that went home, told their general counsel or CEO that there's this guy that actually knows something about LED patent litigation. and I have taken over cases, you know, because of this webinar. And one of my stories goes that, you know, the founder of FineLight, you know, Jerry Mixitall, mm-hmm. he attended one. He went home, told not his company, but someone else to give me a call because those companies were in a litigation for a year. And I got hired in three separate cases. It was like a 3-for-1. Got hired by Green Creative, got hired by Thousand Bulbs. In Texas,
so you're allowed to disclose all this on our show, and there's no chance of us getting sued?
I can, because these are great companies. These are great companies. Uh-huh. Green Creative, ThousandBulbs.com, and then FanLight or PlusRight.
All right, counselor.
Was the third one.
We're counting on you because we don't want to get in trouble here with those guys. We love those companies. They're all great companies. So, you know, a couple different scenarios here, and we're coming up on the end of time, so I'm just going to read them. I don't think we can really get too into them here. Company receives a threat letter from a patent donor, right? Company gets sued for patent infringement by a non-competitor. And situation C, a company wants to enforce its patents either against a competitor or for monetization. So there's a lot of avenues and ways that you can engage David, Greg, and you know, I think we've been following it for years on the Lighting Industry News Brief, all the patent wars, and it's finally great to get an inside look. But before we let David go, Greg, we got to keep it easy, buddy. Come on. With KeystoneTech.com. That's right. KeystoneTech.com, Gregor.
We talk about their area light, their optic swap. I don't know anything about patents with it, but I know it's a great product, and it's something you should consider and use because it makes your life easier when you're selling. You can easily change the optic, you can change the color, you can change the wattage of your area lights. So check it out.
And of course, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, your voice. Come to our convention, September. Come on down, hang out with us. We're going to be learning all sorts of stuff about lighting. NAILD.org. And David Radulescu. Actually, I'll give you his website, radip.com. Check him out. Bye for now.